Record, yes. Sebastian, I think you came probably after that. Pia had told us she's got COVID. No.
Okay.
I
I
think she.
heard 3 times. They know how it is. It's quite bad. Bless her.
Yeah. So this next idea is a tutorial, and if you've had time to have a look, it's quite tricky looking things up, isn't it? We haven't got a sort of standard exercise where you find all the things about this, that, and the other. So, and I didn't send this to you anything like in time for you to do it proper justice.
You must stand corrected, Jane, because your book has at the end of it all the things you need to look up. I suddenly realized after like a while of flicking through my binder, there must be an easier way.
Yeah. Well, in that case, I have forgotten the detail of the index, which I will look up and remind myself. And actually, it was my husband who did that index, so that brings his memory back into our training, because he was a past master of all of that, so he would have made it 13 times more detailed than it actually was in the end. I had to take some things out, thinking, oh no, can't be bothered with that. So, all right then, right. All tutorial preparation can happen via the index of my book. That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So traditionally, these questions actually originated. They've been slightly adapted over the years, but they originated in Luther's own exam paper. Now, his course was not like ours. We've been doing a lot of talking, haven't we? We've been, what about this? What about that? How does this compare with that? His students were medical doctors, and all that he was really concerned about was that the medical doctor was going to be teaching autogenic training correctly. So these questions are pretty basic. They really are. And so they should be quite straightforward and easy to answer, I hope. But Sebastian, you've been very busy, haven't you? I'm terribly aware as well, all of this is in your, not in your first
You
language.
know, the trouble is, I notice when I'm not at work, it's perfectly fine. But when I have Emily, we
Yeah,
were extremely
being
busy. You
busy.
know how hospitals, it's putting a lot of pressure. But anyway, I'll try to do my best,
Yes.
from the starting moment. And anyway, I managed to catch up with, because I run behind. So I think
Well, you've
overall,
now run
so.
past. You've run ahead. I
love that, Sebastian. It's really inspired me. The fact is, you are in a way playing catch up, and yet here you are off the mark. And it is inspiring. It's great that you're holding that torch for us all.
No, do you know, I had sorry to interrupt, I had the opportunity, to be under Jane's wing. I think it's amazing, and I wish all of us to have the opportunity, at least to meet your supervisor or our tutor in person. It's making a huge difference. But at the end of the day, we have what we have. But I think it's amazing to to meet your tutor, face to face. I think it's making a huge difference.
And
Yeah.
we always did that when we could, but sometimes we
Yeah. I
couldn't.
know.
And
I
I,
know.
in fact, Zoom is better than telephone.
Oh yeah, of
I've done
course. Yeah.
telephone
Yeah.
supervision
There
for
is no
many years.
comparison. Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, what you're talking about, Sebastian, is your own personal basic AT that we've been working with, not any training business. We haven't been doing that. So
But
we've only been
anyway,
working with you
Jane,
personally.
you determine me, to get motivated, to practice. It's not all about it's not
Oh,
about only my practice. Yeah, definitely. It's preparation for teaching also. Yeah.
Oh, it is absolutely. We needed to be done. That is
Yes,
perfectly
yes,
right.
yes, yes, yes,
So,
yes.
but I'm not saying that I've given you anything more than anybody
Oh
else
no
right
no
now
no no
being
no no.
teaching. But
But
good.
to have someone to guide you, it's amazing, I mean.
Well, that's all
paying
I'd
attention
say.
to the posture, you know, to the anyway. Yeah, anyway,
Yeah.
it's been good.
Okay. And I hope anybody else would have done it the same. I think I've got to be very equal with that. Okay. Right. So, well, our tutorial then. I was just looking at it just now and I thought, we've already addressed question four, almost. What is the autogenic state, altered state of tutorial number one? Have you found it? Question four. How much you know someone is in the autogenic state? We've just been talking about it, and you know my answer to it.
Are we on starting with question four?
Well, I just thought, hey, we might as well pick up what we've already been talking about.
Let me just find it. Oh, yes. Yeah, we did. We have
Yeah.
answered.
Have we lost Patricia or she?
I don't know. She might have, we I don't know, but we won't wait. We'll just go on. Otherwise, we'll be.
Been here all
Oh, here
this.
she is.
I just didn't turn my thing on. Thank you. I
We might have been talking about you,
know.
Patricia.
Well, it didn't sound like you were, so it's a
Well,
problem.
we are now. Oh, lovely. Okay. So we're looking at question four in the first tutorial, and we've realized we've probably talked about it. And what was the answer we came to with how might you know someone is in the autogenic state? What did we come to with that?
Observing their body, seeing what they come up with, what they write about in their diary, and what they bring to the session.
I think, yes, and of course, I'm thinking of it entirely subjectively. I mean, you're quite right. I'm not disputing because the things that they are talking about are going to be pretty autogenic, aren't they? They're going to be, we will know that that's quite random in any other
I
sort
think
of
it's quite
circumstance.
subjective, so everyone
Yes.
might have a different experience. But paraphrasing, Bev, I think we still should have some sort of, you know, let's say feedback, you know, when you observe the patient, you know, for example, if they are tense, you'll see that, you know, the legs are crossed and the hands like this. Definitely, you know, they are not following the instruction and they are not
Exactly.
relaxing, I would
Yes.
say. So.
So an autogenic state would be impossible without the things that we teach, which is about the
True.
posture, isn't it? And the
Yes.
formulae and the passive observation, which is self-passive observation, and it is so as I said, we could sum it up by saying we couldn't actively personally know what a particular autogenic state is for that particular person. We could never know that. But we do
So,
get our clues.
yeah, are you saying in that sentence that the autogenic state has no singular definition, that by the definition of our uniqueness and our individual process, it will be different for everyone?
I suppose I am saying that, or I would not be saying that, and we would still be none the wiser. It's one of those things there. It's just a term, isn't it? And if there is a meditative state with particular brainwave activity and so on and so on, autogenic training is going to be very similar. There's no question. And we've got relaxation to add to it. So it is all the things that you've said, the jaw dropping, the things we observe while they are practicing, which is why it's really important that we practice with them. I mean, not with our eyes closed. I mean, when you're leading them through, then you can observe those things. But I often find myself looking at someone and thinking, well, I've no idea whether they're in an autogenic state. It's actually their report afterwards that gives you the clue. So there we are. Oh, while I'm talking about that, Sebastian, your shoulder. How is your shoulder?
What has happened? I think I don't know what is the explanation, but it seems that I was meant to have a procedure. They booked the follow-up, but they forgot to book the procedure. So next stage is pulse. Didn't get a chance. I need to complain because it's the second time with the same hospital in the past. Anyway, I don't want to, you know,
No,
complain about it,
no.
but I had the wrong diagnosis with the same hospital. I had to go privately,
Yeah.
and then I had. Anyway,
Okay.
so it's
Can
been
I
some
reframe
issues.
the question? What has happened with your shoulder and orthogenic training?
I don't know whether AT helped. Maybe, I don't know. But watch, you know what? It didn't disturb me lately. So, you know, I only stretching, yeah, or reaching is a bit painful. But I don't know what contributed to this improvement. Definitely physiotherapy, not at all. Perhaps autogenics.
Okay.
I have been practicing.
Do you mind if I talk a little bit about our session?
Please, please feel
because
free.
We were on Zoom, and of course I appreciate this is some weeks ago, but we were doing an exercise and I suddenly noticed that Sebastian was closing and doing everything as writ, whereas on our last training you couldn't do that.
No,
discussing you had to do the foot, the feet, and the one hand only, and all of that, and you couldn't do it. I can't remember how, but it wasn't looking around. So it was me who said, "What's going on with your shoulder, Sebastian?" "Oh," he said, "I've had the best sleep for a long time, and it isn't hurting me anymore." I couldn't believe this. So we had this dialogue about it, and now that is would be sheer. I mean, you're saying maybe autogenics help because we do. We're not sure.
But
actually, for me, that was a real moment.
But perhaps you know, because the pain has decreased, so it's not disturbing me. You know, now it's just normal. So you know, I do things. But you're the one observing me, so I know that when we did last time about a month ago, I could hardly, you know, you remember, and you said, "Please don't start your training. You're going to have to have surgery. Yeah. Better whole weight."
Yeah.
And no, you know, you're right, actually, Jane, because I was practicing on a daily basis.
Yes, you
know.
Mm.
And
and you did it, and it was me who said, "What's happening, Sebastian? That's different."
No, you're right.
And
you're right.
Then
you know,
considered.
I didn't even thought about that, you know, a lot. But
I then guess, you said, "It is better. I've been sleeping so much better, and you've been complaining of bad sleep because of the pain." So, you know, this is the stuff of autogenics. And so from that point of view, we could absolutely agree that you must have been going into the autogenic state, whatever that is or however it manifests, for that change to occur, which is probably autogenic.
And yes, and I noticed that actually I felt relaxed a lot, you know, after practicing AT.
Ah.
And, you know, and I, at the beginning, when starting, you know, doing the exercises, I was tense. Afterwards, you know, like when I've been doing on a daily basis, I have noticed improvement, a lot of saliva. Sometimes my head was, you know, dropping on a side, you know, warmed, you know, heaviness sensations. But actually, you were right. Yeah, you're right, definitely. The pain is gone. So, and believe me, I've been doing physio. Didn't help. No.
And can we remember, Bev and Patricia and Donna, how painful, what a difficult time that Sebastian was having?
Oh, yes.
No, it was. Yeah. But anyway, now
I loved you. So we shouldn't forget that. So, you know, to apply it to this question is quite interesting because, of course, it's exactly as you're saying, Bev, as the client is reporting back to you, we can be, I'm not going to say fairly sure. We can't say that all miracles happen because of autogenics, but that was really quite surprising, wasn't it, Sebastian, when we realised, you know, all those things. So he must have been in an autogenic state. But that's all we can say. He must have been. But what exactly that actually entails, we don't really know.
Wouldn't it be great to
be? You might see the outcome.
Yes, exactly. The outcome will tell us, maybe. Yes, you're right. Yeah. Sorry, Patricia.
That is the most important.
Patricia?
I was just thinking, wouldn't it be great to gather up information from various people over time, you know, who had miracles. I had one, you know, when because I used to be when my back went into spasm, I used to be unable to get out of bed often. I couldn't walk, or if I could, I had to have a walking stick. And that was for years. And after learning autogenics, It hasn't happened. I still get pain in my back, but I can walk. I can I can do, you know, I yeah, you would never know it was the way it was.
A problem.
It was frightening, you know, because I never knew when it was going to happen.
Yeah.
And that's ever since autogenics.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. There we go.
The other thing that I would like to emphasize, and I have to say that anyway, you know, it's like your my personal view, but I don't think I'm wrong. So practicing AT, I remember when I filled out, you know, the pre-sheet, you know,
questionnaire.
Like a little questionnaire. Definitely there are improvements. And one that actually helped me the most, it was to boost my self-esteem. And believe me, it helped me.
Yeah.
All right. So that's all about outcomes. So we've gone away from the question. But anyway, autogenic state. We've probably done that question.
Yeah.
Okay. Where should we go?
Sebastian, like as you're talking and we're thinking about what happened to your shoulder, how the release of tension in the body doing autogenics can have such a remarkable impact and effect on the muscular skeletal, is that how Anne would talk?
Yeah, musculoskeletal, yes.
Yeah, system. And definitely.
Yes, and I'm actually, for both of you, for Patricia and for Sebastian, that chronic pain, I don't know if you've got a reason for it, Patricia, it doesn't matter at the moment, but of course, Sebastian's is a spur, isn't it, which you've said. So that's something that isn't going to go away, the spur.
But
so there's
Jane,
something about it.
I do have a problem with my spine. I have a lot of conditions to split this. And believe me, I've been practicing, you know, regular AT, the pain, no pain, no pain. I'm like brand new.
Me. And then, of course, when we get to this sort of point with a client and it's the end of the course and people thank me, not that you've done that, that's not the point, but then I always say, and who has done the work here? Who has carried out this treatment? And of course, it's you. And that's an important thing to say to people because they have done all this for themselves, which is very important. They're committed.
But on the other hand, you need the right tutor. You need someone to teach you precisely what to do.
Yes, that's all right. But that only happens once a week. The real work is done by the person on their own at home. That's when the work is done. And it's useful for people to realise that, I think.
There's another thing as well. I mean, since my fall in January, even doctors and friends, they couldn't believe how quickly I was recovering. And I mean, neither could I. I mean, it was incredible for what happened to me and how quickly I was recovering. And again, I say that was autogenic training, you know, it really was. I'm sure it was. I'm convinced it was.
And as long as you're convinced, it's true.
Yeah.
And it will be, because it is true. We understand that. Yes. Yes, sorry, I'm just getting my fluids together.
Okay.
Right. Where are we going next? How would you introduce standard exercise one, heaviness?
Introduce it.
Introduce, actually, that's Luther's word. And over the years, I'm realizing that explain is also an important word.
I wonder, and I think this is in the notes, there's something about, you know, explaining the rationale behind heaviness. And maybe that autogenic training grew out of observations and research into hypnosis, sleep, meditation, and, you know, the sensations that were observed in people in those states, the warmth and the heaviness.
Mm-hmm.
But finding a way to explain it that doesn't make it sound complex or magical or some, you know, just some, yeah, strange phenomenon. But just introducing, you know, heaviness for curious people, they might wonder, well, why heaviness?
And I think Schultz's answer to that would be that people associate very often a description of relaxation as feeling heavy. That when, if I'm saying I'm relaxed, actually my arms or legs or whatever it is actually feeling heavy. And we can expand on that a little bit by saying, actually, if I've got tension in my arm, I have now because I'm holding it up here. But if I decide I'm going to relax it, it's going to fall down. And then there's something else that helps the falling down. What would that be?
Gravity.
Yep, that's it. So we've got a combination of the central nervous system not working at this precise moment when we let go, blast the gravity, bonk, and that's where we get our heaviness from. That's as simple as you can get, probably.
Yeah, like letting go and letting
go. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, that's good. And then, of course, you would put in a few other things. I mean, is it necessary to feel heavy?
No.
No.
But I believe personally, you know, every time when I practice, I do feel my, you know, my limbs, my arms and legs heavy. Mm. In my case, definitely, I do have sensations of heaviness, but perhaps this might not work for everyone.
Yes. And let's be careful with the language about it working, because that's very often where people stumble and say it doesn't work. Were you going to say something, Bev? Sorry.
I was going to bring in paradoxical symptom of life.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. We'll wait for a moment for that. Yes. But yes, so you're quite right, Sebastian, to describe your own experience as very much your own. And so we will leave our when we're teaching, we could leave our own experience out of it. And we can just say, this is our first exercise. It's all about the difference between tension and then letting go and gravity. And that's all it is. And it might be a sense of heaviness and it might not. And it doesn't really matter. So we can be very casual and nonchalant in the way we introduce it as well. And as soon as we start saying 99% people feel.
No. We don't need to give percentages.
No.
But I think we should let the client know that they might feel or not. You know, there is a possibility. It doesn't matter.
Well, we can say that, and we can also say, but the real task is just to look around the whole body as you're practicing and see what other sensations might be coming up for you. So that widens it out. It doesn't say you might feel heaviness or you might not, or you never know. But actually, what's going on in your tummy? What's going on in your or on your forehead, or, you know, some other itch in your ear or something? We're learning to notice what's around us, so we don't have to have heavy. Anything to add? Oh, Bev, you're going to talk about something else.
Oh, yeah, no, on the same lines as that. And I took this either from the notes or from your book, but it's a list of things that clients can feel other than heaviness, which is a detachment or a feeling of displacement in their training limb, tingling or twitching, weakness or lameness, numbness or reduced sensation, and then lightness that I mentioned before. So it was really interesting to revisit and actually remember that heaviness could be perceived as something else.
Mm. Yes. Or we have an attachment to what we think it should be. Yeah. And of course, there are so many other possibilities. The body is extraordinary. And the thing is, it isn't that the word heaviness makes you feel that you've got a detached limb, not necessarily. So we're not even saying that. We are really saying, in general, whenever we're doing autogenics, we're just observing everything that is going on in the body that we can observe. I often use the term, the words we use in autogenics are just the vehicle for getting us into an autogenic state, whatever that is. So the words don't really matter. So there's that to put in the mix as well. Doesn't have to be heavy. So what factors may interfere with the development of heaviness? I can think of two, I think.
if the person has got some sort of mobility, you know, let's say if they are paralyzed or they cannot move their arms properly or legs, or if they have a problem, I think about trying to induce a sensation of heaviness. They might be scared, or I don't know.
Well, even trying too hard is some of what you're saying, isn't it? I must make this arm heavy. I wonder how I do it. And we get all the wrong sort of thought
So,
processes.
but that it's like, I would say this is active concentration. It's like, you
Yes.
know, you want to achieve something, but
That's it. Well
we're not
done.
actually looking forward, you know. I mean, you it's this is not the focus, this is not
No.
the aim, you know. I mean,
No.
while practicing heaviness, I assume.
Quite right. Quite right. It is not the aim. That's a really good way to put it, actually. It's just the words that just take us into some place where body mind does its own work on itself. So heavy on its own is never an aim. It couldn't be. Well done. That's lovely.
Thank you.
Anything else?
Something about the training environment, incorrect postures, that kind of thing.
Well, yes, loosely, I'm going to say actually they probably aren't relaxed. They haven't let go properly in the so that could be posture related. Absolutely. Yes. I think tension gets in the way. How could anyone feel anything actually if they're sitting, as you mentioned earlier, with your legs crossed or with a some kind of discomfort? That's why we've got the postures so that everything is symmetrical and comfortable, and therefore it's relaxed, and therefore the limbs are free to experience whatever they're going to experience. We don't need to dwell on this, I don't think. Patricia and Donna, anything to add? No.
I don't think so.
Problem is, with all of this, we can talk around it for hours and hours, and we don't actually make any progress because there's so many variations. What's the short stitch exercise? We've talked about that today.
A priming exercise used to train passive awareness.
Yep. And what is it exactly?
Is the
My.
first taste of 80.
Yep. Let be we are we want to know that when you're teaching the short stitch, you're going to teach it correctly. So how what will it be?
My right or left arm is heavy. My right or left arm is heavy. My right or left arm is heavy. Close. One stitch.
And a one stitch, fantastic. Then you've got how many stitches? We've already talked about that. Five or six little stitches or exercises in one session. I know you know that. So an awful lot of this is obvious. So please be bold and be obvious. It's all right. Well, they're none of them trick questions. Are they trick questions, Donna? No.
It was just the autogenic state one, I think, that was a trick.
That was a bit of a trick question. You're quite right. Yes, I think perhaps that's why I plunged into that one first. But actually, the rationale for the short stitch, yes, what is that? I think you've said it already, Bev, or certainly a part of it.
It's a gentle introduction to the autogenic process.
Lovely. That's a good one. Oh, why?
Because it's taught at the beginning, so
Yep. And
It's a very short, you know, and the clients, they can get used to it very easily, especially their attempts.
okay. And I don't think you even need an extended answer. You've given a beautiful answer there, but I would just say actually it's very short. And you can't do it wrong. Not really.
And everyone, you know, doesn't like short or long exercises at the very, you know, beginning. So better to start with something very, very short, you know, and then.
There's another reason, which is a little bit more serious, not just about whether somebody likes something. We don't know, do we, when they start, whether they would like a long or a short. So we do have a reason for starting this way. What might that be?
It teaches how to close.
Yes, certainly does that. Yes. Because you're closing so much. Yes. And why would that be a good thing?
Because when you're entering a relaxation state, the blood pressure tends to drop. Am I not answering the question?
I think you've diverted a little bit. What is the advantage of a short exercise at the beginning? Because actually, with a long exercise, the blood pressure might well drop, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. So,
you mean, why do we have to close?
What is the advantage of doing this very short exercise at the beginning of the course?
So to enter the, what is his name, the autogenic
state,
state,
go on.
And then to, you know, to return to the starting point, because, you know, when you enter the relaxation state, the blood pressure will drop. When you close, is actually, it will, you know, it will bring your blood pressure up.
That is correct.
But
why shouldn't they do anything longer, Bev?
In case they can't continue, they've not then opened up the autogenic process. They've started with the short stitch, something along those lines.
Yes, I think I'm getting what you're saying, that if we started, for example, with full heaviness, which is what they used to do on day one, and somebody who's quite heavily loaded and we just don't know what the process is going to be, that could be far too long for them. Why?
Because heaviness can open the autogenic process.
It absolutely can. That is a very good answer. But there's also, and also just the length of time in there, we don't know how anybody's going to react at the very beginning. So it is safer. That's really the key. It's safer to start short and just give them the short ins and outs, hence the name. So it is about safety as much as anything else.
And I think we just notice how the client is getting on, you know, whether they won't like it, they will start from the server, hey, this is not for me, you know. But I think it's just to prepare your body to get used to, you know, to...
It does prepare, yes, it prepares an awful lot of us, actually. It prepares us so much for finding out what the postures are like, the actual ins and outs of going in and out of it so often. Teaches us a lot about the clothes, as somebody's already said. Did I understand there that you think that if somebody was taught a longer exercise at the beginning, they might not like it? Is that what you meant, Sebastian? No. What did you mean?
We got lost.
Okay, we've got lost. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Don't worry. But it is. It's the start. It's a starting point, isn't it? And it's a safe starting point because nothing is too long. That would be a perfectly good answer. Donna and Patricia, anything else to add on that one?
No.
The rationale for short stitch, right. Okay. Question two. Loosening up or motor garbage exercise. How and when? This should be quite quick.
We introduced this with heaviness part two, where I'm wrong. Sorry.
Very nice. Well done. That's what I do. And it is a good time. Then you've started yourself off at a good point with the offloading exercises. Yeah.
I might introduce them earlier because I really liked Donna's approach to kind of having an observation week of whether, you know, a client observes themselves being irritated before the introduction of the intentional offloading of anger. So I'd love to try that as an approach with my first client. Yeah.
So you would move the starting point of the intentional offloading. That's fair enough. Yes.
I think I'd do it with heaviness part one, unless there was, I think you wrote in the notes, an obvious prompt of, you know, restless legs or something. Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I really do think that this exercise could be introduced almost at assessment sometimes. I've done that before now, where people have just described. And what were we talking about with Pia? The person who can't sit still and is in trauma brain. We never know how just a simple floppy outlet of tension with the offload, with the motor garbage exercise could be amazing for them. Because very often when we've got a troubled body, all we can do is wish it would go away. So someone who's got maybe anxiety tremors, and the cup and the saucer are rattling. We know we've all seen that on the TV. And then actually the huge effort that the person is making to try and stop that tremble. And actually, our loosening up exercise is all about, hey, body, if you've got to do it, let's let you do it. Come on, let's do it big time. And here we are, we're doing something entirely what the body wants. So it gets rid of that tremor. I've no idea if it will, of course, but if it's associated with anxiety, it's quite likely to. So you can have some fun with that one, some laughter. I always say, find a child under the age of 3 to join in.
Well, they're a bit big now, but I did that with both my grandchildren, especially my grandson, who is pretty hyper.
Yes.
It works.
Mm. And I've taught nursery school or primary school teachers, and they've all brought their children in after the lunchtime break back into the classroom, and they have all stood and done a loosening up exercise and a blah, 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 and they all love it and they roar with laughter, and then they settle down to their afternoon's work. She said it's brilliant, mm-hmm. especially the ones who are a wee bit edgy and, yeah.
Hyper.
Hyper's the word, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, noise one. Oh, so the rationales, I beg your pardon, what's the rationale for the motor garbage exercise? Why would we do it?
To release the tension.
Mm.
To help to get into the autogenic state easier.
You're right there, actually. If people do the motor garbage exercise before they sit down into their postures and do an exercise, it can actually enhance or just get more quickly into a state of relaxation. That could be really useful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Lovely. Okay. And what about another time of day when we wish we were relaxed, but we can't and we keep tossing and turning?
Middle of the night.
Middle of the night. Well done. You spotted my use of the word day. Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Get up for a pee. Go somewhere where the floorboards don't creak.
Yeah,
before. And have a bit of a shakeout before you get back into bed. Zonk. Lovely. Yeah. Lovely, lovely. And the noise garbage, what's the rationale for that? We know what it is, I'm presuming.
Yeah. Because we grow up in a conditioned society where, you know, perhaps some of our natural expression is inhibited. Yeah.
And how would we know that we would need to do this as an adult? I mean, you've given a very good background, but how would we know?
Finding ourselves kind of struggling to speak in nervous or tense situations, kind of the voice, lump in the throat, maybe.
Yeah, or clearing a throat. I mean, I've got a cough at the moment, but somebody who's... quite a lot can do quite a lot with the noise. Blah, 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 blah. You can perform it. You need to perform it when you're introducing it.
I think we need a video, you know, like the other three you gave us on the postures, Jane. I think we'd like one of the loosening up exercise and one of the noise exercise. Thank you very much.
Make your own, I'll say. Right. Okay. There's another one, actually, where, because I think it's sometimes the noise exercise has got a little bit of crying need symptom in there. You've just mentioned lump in the throat and we've got or frequent swallowing and things like that. And the breathing sometimes when we need to cry can happen up here rather than down here, or rather, yes, because we don't want it to happen down there. If it happens down there, I'm going to start to cry. So I'll start breathing, chest breathing here. And so those are the signs, really, where the noise exercise can be really helpful. But the advantage of teaching both these together, what would that be?
You can have a jolly good laugh at yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Top of the class. Yes. It's just a fun fun way to get started with the offloading exercises. It really is. And then, you know, as you're demonstrating it, and maybe a few people are in the room and you're having a good shakeout. And then I usually manage to kick a foot out and start a word or two. And then I say, well, actually, it could go into some anger. You know, it just depends what's going on around you. So you can open that little doorway there. Never know how that might be. Yeah.
Best when you grizzle like a toddler, Jane.
Oh, have I done that?
Yeah, so I've seen you do that several times. It's very good.
Oh, I think toddler grizzling is my one thing that really hits me in here. I hate it. I absolutely hate it. Oh, mommy.
What is toddler grizzling?
It's what Jane showed us many years ago, how to start off the crying exercise if we wanted to try that technique. Yeah.
Oh, I see. Attached to the crying exercise. Yes.
You know, like whinging.
Yes, that's interesting, isn't it? Because perhaps whinging is actually the child's crying need.
Yeah.
It needs to have a cry.
A full burst of loud crying as well. Well, if it's ignored, I think it's because it wants attention. Probably.
Oh, yes, of course it is. It is. But then, of course, we give it the wrong sort of attention.
Yeah, I know.
Tell it to be quiet. But anyway, there we go. Right. Where are we then? We've got to training postures, just quickly whistling through the reasons for why we have our, we've talked a bit about it today already.
Simple sitting position, posture, and the lying.
Horizontal, yeah.
Sorry, horizontal.
Yeah. That's all right, yeah. And why do we have them?
To allow for symmetrical relaxation of the body.
Yeah, brilliant. Certainly it helps relaxation if the body is symmetrical, if we put it that way round, but you're quite right. Absolutely. And I always say that the right and left sides of the brain want to know exactly what they're dealing with. Okay. And they're more likely to be at ease with the body without folded arms and crossed legs and so on.
Yes.
Okay. And, can you think of any errors? There are quite a lot, really, aren't there? I think as you start to teach autogenics, you will be picking them up quite quickly. What would be wrong with this? I'm on the edge of the seat and I'm getting into my posture. What's wrong with this?
Active holding of the head.
Yeah, absolutely. And not only that, it's wrongly angled. I'm sticking my chin out and I need to bring the chin in, which is better for the skeleton, and then I can let it drop. And as I let it drop, the whole body drops a little bit more. So yes, a few things like that.
We need to pay attention, you know, to the knees, not to touch, you know, to be a 90 degree angle at the joint knee.
The joint, yeah.
And we need to make sure that actually, you know, the person is not having the full support, you know, on the chest. So the body supports on the legs and, you know, on the chair. And then, do you know what I noticed today? So my client, she wanted, you know, to use, she was having a computer, you know, but it's not like the one that I have, a computer chair. And I said, no, get a dining chair just to avoid any, you know, any hazard. Because, you know.
Any accidents.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I think first check the environment is very important, you know, and see what materials we have available, what kind of chair, whether it's an armchair, whether, you know.
Well, yes, and of course, Bob, we're talking about the simple sitting posture. Of course, that's never done in an armchair,
and neither
is it done sitting on the side of a bed.
That's wrong also, yeah.
Why would it be wrong? Simple sitting posture.
First of all, you know, you've got the mattress, it's very soft, you're sinking, you know, and then it's too low.
Yep.
You know?
Yes.
And then every time when I'm sitting, even on the edge of the bed, I want to lie flat.
Yeah, well, there we go. There's another thing. But you're going to introduce tension there. If you're sitting on the edge of a bed,
the mattress,
you're quite right, is too bendy. And that means that you're going to hold the tension in your back in order to stop you falling over. So that's why we can never recommend it on the edge of a bed. Well done.
Other errors, sometimes the patient, sorry, why I'm seeing patient, the client might, perhaps they might want to try to see whether their arms are heavy or not, you know, like checking the sensation of heaviness is another error.
Yes, just sort of lifting it. Am I heavy? Well, of course not, if you're lifting your arm up. So those are the things to correct. Well done. Any other things to add there, Donna and Patricia, or we're sort of covering things, are we, do you think?
One is the hands. You mentioned it earlier. If the hands are sort of hanging off somewhere as well, that's quite a common or an easy one for people to do. They hang their arms off.
Yes.
The arms of the chair. So that could, sometimes they're better in the lap.
Well, they would be, definitely, because if the arms, even if it's comfortable to sit with the arms like that, you've still got pooling of the blood in the fingertips, which can be quite uncomfortable if you're sitting there for any length of time. So that's a mistake. And also you've got something digging in there. Mm. Yes. right. Yes, Bev.
Yeah, I was just wondering, if we have a client that doesn't have an armchair, can they do it quite correctly on the sofa? Because I think Donna is on the sofa, you know, with a cushion or something.
The thing is, we shouldn't get too wrapped up in the name armchair posture. It's had that name for donkey's years. Mm. But actually what we're talking about, I think we mentioned this earlier, that as long as the chair you're sitting in has got a back, it doesn't even have to have any arms. You could just sit back on that chair, a dining chair or my office chair as it is now, and just have your hands, palms down on each leg, and that would be described as an armchair posture because it's all you've got to sit on, and that's fine. What you can't do is an armchair posture on a stool.
Yes.
That's the only difference.
Yeah, because you don't have to have your head resting like I've got.
No.
Blanket here, and this is comfy for me. Mm. But you can also just hold the weight of the head in a neutral position.
You can. You're quite right. And actually, for me, I wouldn't want to sit in a chair like yours. I think I would have to do it without the blanket, because it looks very comfortable, and I might sit like that and think, "Oh, this is nice." But actually, what's happening is the blanket is pushing my head forward. And it actually wants to go forward. Then, and if that happens, then you must let it. Go all the way forwards. But everybody's different, and I like sitting in trains, which does have the upright at the right height for me. But it's all what I was going to say, personal and individual, of course. And the whole idea of the armchair posture is perhaps it's the most versatile of all the postures, for obvious reasons, that you're in a car or in a bus quite often, or you're sitting at a train station, or you're waiting for your delayed flight, or even on the aeroplane. There are loads of places where you would use the armchair posture because there simply is nothing or nowhere else to practice it. And you wouldn't sit on the edge of your seat, would you, in an aeroplane? That would look very peculiar, and somebody would say, please sit back and put your seatbelt on. So no. So there we've got the postures. People are going to develop their own in the end. Right. We have described, haven't we? I'm looking at question 5 now. Passive and active concentration. You were mentioning it earlier, Sebastian, completely correctly. What's the main point about active concentration? The main point?
Is it goal-orientated? So you try to achieve something.
Yeah.
But I think all of us, even when I started AT, I was thinking, hang on, I need to feel this. I must feel this. So, but definitely not. You know, you just enjoy it. You just practice, you know. let your body and mind work.
Yes,
sorry, let your
absolutely.
body.
But you're right. And the fact is that at the start, that's how many people are at the start. And that's our job, is to say, it doesn't matter if it isn't heavy. You don't have to look for heaviness. Don't try too hard. Nothing will happen if you try too hard. So we're just training ourselves to look at the whole being sitting as it is. And if your right knee wobbles during the exercise, hooray, write it down in your book. Yeah. So passive is, what are Luther's words?
Nonchalant.
Nonchalant and casual. If you never forget those two words, you're a good autogenic therapist.
Except loads of people might not know what nonchalant means.
Well, you're right. But the funny thing is, somebody did ask me that recently. I can't remember. Anyway, a lot of people say what clever words they are. But, you know, with people who like words, and they stop and think about them. I think, actually, that is very, very clever, because nonchalant really does mean don't care, throw away, oh, I might as well, hey-ho.
The same passive means, no, just a passive attitude. You're just sitting on a bench and, you know, you hear the birds singing, you know, you're just a passive observer. You don't take too much into account what's going on.
Except, of course, we do want to take into account what is going on, because what is going on naturally is what we do take account of. So, and I think that passive is sometimes an off-putting word. And that's why I think casual and nonchalant are so clever. Because if we say you must use passive concentration and not worry about things, what am I not supposed to worry about? I can't understand. What is it? What is passive? So passive and active, yes, very good what's the word? Introduction, which you were explaining this morning, Sebastian. There's that, yes. But while we are practicing, how do we really know what passive is? But if it's casual, my right arm is heavy. Oh, my thumb jumped there. My right arm is heavy. My right arm is heavy. Oh, now my left foot's jumped. My right arm is heavy. And that is allowing a casual, what should we say, management doing of the phrase, but also noticing what's going on alongside it. Anyway.
I think non-judgmental for the passive.
Non-judgmental, absolutely.
Because you're not, even you're just not judging, just observing. Yeah. That's what we're meant to be doing.
Yeah. I've actually got another word coming into my vocabulary these days, which is curious.
Yeah, I like that too.
Let's be curious about what's going on, because that doesn't mean we're going to judge it. We're just going to allow it. Yes, Bev.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's from the French and it means to be unconcerned. So not concerned, nonchalant.
Nonchalant. Ah, nonchalant. Yes, absolutely unconcerned. Thank you. Of course.
Yeah, unconcerned. And I've had a look at that because I thought, yeah, that's a French derivative.
Yes. You did a lot of research, Bev.
No, only just now, typing on my laptop. I like words, yeah.
And obviously you're a linguist, which helps, doesn't it? Of course, nonchalant. Of course it's a French word. Isn't that wonderful? Yes. Yes. Nonchalant. Chalant.
Yeah. Or laissez-faire. You can just tell everyone to have a laissez-faire.
Laissez-faire.
Yeah, let's go.
You know, I've got a ridiculous story. Do you mind if I tell a ridiculous story?
No.
We were
we love
on
your
holiday.
Stories.
My husband and I, well, it's nothing to do with AT. My husband and I were on holiday with a friend of ours in France, and we were driving, and we were coming up to a village which was called Lesse, Lesez, I think it was. And there was a huge traffic jam and we couldn't get through anything. And we were, oh, gosh, what a nuisance. And we said, oh, can we go another way? And what's going to happen? And blah, 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 blah. And as we got nearer, we realised, oh, goodness me, there are tents and arcades and there are swings and there are all sorts of things. And there was a big notice and it said fair. And we Oh, yeah, understood now, of course. And then my husband from the back seat, buried away where he couldn't really see anything, he said, "Oh, it's laissez-faire." And we just creased up with laughter, because he was quite right. We were driving through the village of Lesse, and there was a fair, and there is that phrase that we keep using in our language. Yeah. It was just a very funny moment, especially as we'd all been so aggravated of being held up. So there we go. Laissez-faire, but people might not understand that either, might they? So, and laissez-faire is really let it go, isn't it?
Yeah, let it be.
Leave alone. Yeah, fair, to do. Or let it do itself.
Let it unfold as itself.
Yes. Isn't that lovely?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Hey. Okay. Absolute contraindications to learning AT.
People taking non-prescribed drugs and relying on alcohol.
That's absolute for now, isn't it?
Well, yeah. There is a language barrier and the client... Well, wait a minute.
Can we just finish this one?
I mean, if...
There's a little... You're not going to take on anybody who is suffering at the moment with addictions to non-prescribed drugs or substances and alcohol. Okay, what are you going to say about that?
Well, if I come back to you in 6 months' time and they can tell me honestly that they're clean and sober, yeah, I would be happy probably to take them on.
Come on, absolutely. And of course, how we prove that is another question altogether. However, but that's quite right. So therefore, it isn't an absolute contraindication. I'm splitting hairs here.
Okay.
It's not absolute, is it? Because it's not an absolute no-no. They must never go near it. We are saying with the condition that they dry and clean themselves.
Yeah, okay, get that.
Yeah. Okay, sorry, what were you going to say, Sebastian? Language?
Yeah, language barrier, you know, whether the client, potential client might have some sort of learning difficulties, then they might not understand the instructions. With kids under the age of 5, somewhere, and absolute, and if someone had a stroke or heart attack, we're not supposed to do AT with them within the law, within 3 months or sort of, or 6 months post. We have to wait up to 6 months or 3 months, or am I wrong?
Yeah, you're right, but again, that's not absolute. It's relative, because that might be all right. But you're quite right to flag it up. Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Beth?
People whose health condition is unknown, because we don't have an assessment for them. Acute psychiatric illness.
Yes. You're quite right, and especially at the level that you are at, just starting out, you would not take on anybody with paranoid schizophrenia. You just wouldn't. But neither would that person come to you to learn autogenic training. I think it's highly unlikely.
Yeah.
Having said that, I have taught a few people with really interesting stories where they have been diagnosed with some, you know, with bipolar or something of that kind. I think bipolar would be all right with autogenics. I don't know what you feel, Patricia and Donna. But I think with the right medication, I have taught one or two people. But sometimes I remember in particular a woman who was sort of 60-odd, late 50s maybe, and she came along to learn autogenics. I think she had anxiety, had been going on lifelong. And in her story and her questionnaire, I was absolutely astounded to read that she had very recently been discharged from a psychiatric hospital. So, of course, we had to have that conversation and what was going on. And it turned out that as a child, she'd had strict parents, and that when she grew into a teenager, she fell out with her father big time. Her father went and sought help from, I don't know, some powerful people somewhere or other. And this woman, as a teenager, was put into this hospital. And she stayed there for 40 years.
Oh.
And I asked her some more about it and what it was like. And she said, well, I can't remember now, actually, all the detail at all. But it was something along the lines of well, of course, it was a horrible place, but I kind of made the best of it and stuff like that. And what on earth was it like to come out then? What happened? Were you, you know, how did it happen? If you've been diagnosed with a serious psychiatric illness, that you're suddenly discharged. She said they were closing all the hospitals. And it was that time in the late 80s, 90s, they started closing down the long-term psychiatric hospitals and wanting to put people into the community. And I said, how was all of that? And she said, well, it was very tough, actually. I'd never lived in the world before, but I did have the support of my sisters and a few people and everything. And she'd got her own place and she was living and she'd got a bit of work and all the rest of it. Well, I thought, this woman has never had a psychiatric illness. It was teenage growing up with the most appalling outcome of her father having a lot of power and putting her away. I said that to her. I mean, not in such direct language, but I said, I'm hearing a really, really distressing story of how you were treated. And she said, yes. And I said, what's your feeling about having that diagnosis? She said, no, in the end, the doctors who were sorting out the patients for discharge agreed with me that I had never been ill. So it is always worth asking a story in detail. And she might have written down on the questionnaire, living in this place for 40 years, and I might have immediately thought, well, I can't have her then. But when you're talking to the person and it's a human story, and my gut feel was, my God, this poor woman, of course she needs autogenic training. Let's do it. And she did. She found it, you know, self-esteem was something that you mentioned, Sebastian. And she didn't have very much. She hadn't had much opportunity to gain anything through her life. And that began to come through and she started being a bit creative and so on. She was a lovely person to work with. Absolutely lovely.
But paraphrasing you, I think, you know, I have a let's say, colleague. He was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia when he was a kid, but I think it was a problem with the Romanian system. But with the proper support, he is now a teacher, he's done a PhD, yes. He's got kids, he's got a lovely family, and he's fully social, very sociable person. I think the environment and the social support is the most important, regardless of your mental illnesses.
Yes. And what we're talking about with my story is that this woman, this was sort I didn't do the sums, but it must have been in the 1940s that she was put away. Because really? she was 59 when I met her, and that would have been in the late 80s, 90s. Can we do the sums? I don't know. But I mean, really a long time ago, which is what they did. If someone,
that's scary.
You're absolutely right. Of course, with support, anybody can have help. And then, of course, there are people with really genuine psychiatric problems, but they're not going to come and see you. So the times that we have to say, no, you cannot learn autogenic training. I can't remember the last time I ever did. I don't think I did. So usually I'm more likely to say, given your history, we must go very carefully and very gently, but let's see how it goes. We can stop at any time and we will just take it gently and move forward, whatever. Yeah. Now, if you were answering an exam question, you wouldn't tell my story, but you might mention severe psychiatric recent history, you could say, or psychotic episode, tendency to psychotic episodes. But even those can sometimes be lifted out of a story of difficulty. And then you can realize, well, maybe these psychotic episodes are the body just trying to protect itself. Just trying to do bizarre behavior so somebody takes some sort of action to help me. You know, we don't always have to say that a psychotic episode is bad. She said, with very little psychiatric experience, I only have autogenic experience. Yeah. Have you got any thoughts on those, Donna? With
I was just thinking how amazing our brain is, actually, to protect us, to bury things when we're not ready to take them on board, to release them in a way that we can deal with them at its own pace or at our own pace. And we won't have any knowledge of that as therapists, and they won't have any knowledge of that as themselves, really. But their brain, kind of as a different entity, is doing all this work, and we don't know what, you know, what it's going to do. But I've got a lot of trust in brains to kind of release things at the right time.
Yes.
And to only give you, or the client, patient, whatever, enough that they can deal with at that time. Because we just don't know enough about it. But I've got trust in the client themselves, that if that their brain is there to protect them. And a lot of psychosis, or, you know, could be exactly what the brain is doing with that. Like you've just said, really. So yeah, I think that's and that can quite often reassure people as well, because they're like, oh, I don't want to just plunge into something, I don't want to open up this can of worms. And actually you'll find that they won't go from sort of 0 to 60. It will be gradual and at their own pace.
Yes, I think. And it is lovely that to be able to say that to someone, isn't it? Because when you're saying, well, actually, mind, body, memory, we don't quite know what's going to come up in an autogenic process. It's always interesting, and we always know it's natural, so there's nothing to worry about with it, but it doesn't always feel pleasant. I don't think I want to do that. I think I don't know. Oh, no, I don't think I want to do that. So then I say, well, it won't do anything you can't cope with, which is just what you've said, Donna. And I've said, the things that you can't cope with maybe don't need to come to the surface. And then I think we can regard them like sediment at the bottle, at the bottom of a bottle of good red wine. It can just sink down into our nether regions. It doesn't actually need to come up and trouble us again. And I think an autogenic process can do that as well. It'll bring things up, and it'll also quieten things down properly, rather than just hiding them. Bev.
Yeah, I kind of want to also bring into this discussion the fact that we have a choice, and the fact that we can close, so that, you know, we don't have to necessarily rely on our brain or the actual process itself to modulate or regulate the intensity of the experience, but that with our own awareness, we can choose feels too much to close.
Yes, that, of course, and you're absolutely right there. Of course, we've got that choice, and that's exactly why we've got the close as well, because it's our bit of safety mechanism as well if it all gets a bit too much. However, of course, sometimes our processing is not actually during our autogenic exercises, so we might just have a day where we're feeling tearful, or we're close to tears all the time. We can't think why. We don't know. It absolutely, it's very strange. And then the person will say, but I had a good cry. Everybody went out on Tuesday night and I just cried. And then I cried again. And then I cried again. Oh, I was exhausted at the end of that. But you know what? On Wednesday morning, I woke up feeling completely different. And I have no idea what that was about. Now, closing doesn't come into that, does it? Because it's just a way of being that's just happening on that particular day.
Yeah.
And people have naturally gone in there. They're more likely to cry if they're learning autogenics than if they're not learning autogenics, quite honestly. That's often the way. So we might not even have got anywhere near doing offloading exercises, but it's been happening naturally. So the close isn't all, it's the answer when we're in an exercise, but not otherwise. But of course, we've got other choices. And the other choices might be, well, if I'm needing to cry so much, I better go and do it, which might be new for them. They might not have done that before. They've soldiered on, or distracted themselves, or get busy with something else to stop themselves crying. Maybe now, maybe I can cry.
Yeah, interesting. Maybe the process knows now that we've got good techniques to offload the anger. So instead of it being suppressed, can't cope with that, we now so afraid of our own anger that we can go and offload it safely without it taking us over. Yeah. Great technique.
Now, but that's an interesting one in itself. Because anger and crying need and all the rest of it can come up during autogenic training. And in the old days, they didn't have intentional offloading. So that was when they got stuck with their autogenics. So we are lucky. We've got these ways to encourage people to move the anger out and to move the crying out by doing those exercises. And you've just so wisely said, Bev, that people can be afraid of their anger. Hence, they might be suffering from anxiety and not even realise that anger is behind it. It's only when it all begins to shift, begin to unravel things a bit. So where did that come from? Absolute contraindications to learning AT. We've gone a bit off piste there, I think, haven't we?
Fascinating, though, where our conversations go. Yeah.
I think what's so lovely is that we don't have to attach a theory to it. We are talking about the natural evolution of mind and body. And it's all right to have our emotions. It's all right to have our thoughts. It's all right to have our questions. It's all right to have our process. And it doesn't actually matter which direction it goes in, because nobody cares, because it has to be natural. If anybody cared too much, that would put a lid on it straight away, wouldn't it? It's just a movement. Have I ever said this to you? I say this often with my hands resting on my knees when I'm at an assessment. I say to somebody, we don't know what's going to happen in autogenic training, but we could think of it a bit like this. Today, you are here in this place. And I pat my hands on my knees. And maybe what you wish for and where you want to be and everything in your life is hunky-dory is going to be in this place. And how are we going to get from here to here? And I say that's going to be the intriguing part. When you're learning autogenic training, you're in a process. A little bit here, something else is coming up here, something going happening there, somebody's doing this, somebody's doing this. And eventually, maybe actually we never get to somewhere like this. It's always going to go frittering on all through our lives, little bits and pieces going on forever. And that's just the way that we go. And it seems to be, well, for some people anyway, some people think I'm totally mad. And then others will say, yeah, I get that actually, because sometimes people want to feel better. I want the switch to switch on and I'm sleeping. And of course, it's never going to be like that.
Or I'll pay you a bit of money, we'll transact together, and at the end of it, I'll get what I came for.
Oh.
Yeah.
Big mistake.
Be like that. You know, I thought, okay, yeah, let's transact some change. It doesn't work like that, does it?
No, not entirely. That's why we have to be very careful about making promises, which comes to your question, Ben.
Yes, well remembered.
I'm glad of that. I need to find that hanging loose article and find which part bit you were talking about. Do we, I don't know, how are we going to do this? I'm happy to do that with a little extra time with you, Bev, but we've actually come to the end of our day at 20 past four.
I can read you what it says. It's only a sentence.
Oh, right. Yes, good.
Let me just dig it out.
I know which article it is. It's the Leslie Kenton one, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's such a great, well-written article.
It's a good piece, isn't it? Yeah.
Really good. So it says here, according to Wolfgang Luther, Schultz's successor, now considered the world expert, autogenic training can help cure respiratory disorders such as asthma and tuberculosis, irritable colon, peptic ulcer, ulcerative colitis, obesity, sexual dysfunctions, hypertension, cardiac arrhythmias, low back pain, endocrine and metabolic dysfunctions such as diabetes and functional thyroid disorders, and neurological disorders such as epilepsy, cerebral palsy and neuralgia.
Oh my God, I can cure all those.
Help cure. And I just read it and I thought, ooh.
I think that's really interesting. And the word that needs to come out is cure, because help
Yes.
Is excellent.
Yeah, but cure is wrong, isn't
well,
it?
Help cure might be all right. It probably is all right, because that is true for some people. I know of lots of people with the bowel problems and asthma and so on. And now tuberculosis seems a bit odd, because you've got the drugs to cure that, and that's what we'd be doing there. So we need to have a look at that, just to monitor what is going out there. I haven't read that article for ages, and I'm really glad you've drawn our attention to that, Bev.
Better reading it than listening. But did it start off saying according to?
Yes.
So it's kind of his view, if you like, rather than we're saying it will.
That's a very good point.
And it's also from the 1980s, this article.
Yeah.
It's quoting Wolfgang Luther, but it's also quoting him being the world expert. So saying the world expert on autogenic says that it can help cure all that list. And it just feels like, from an ethical point of view, and from what I'm learning in the training, that actually we shouldn't make any claims about cure, you know, that it
the thing is, the operative word there is help, actually. Yeah. It isn't making a claim for a cure. If we read it absolutely literally, it is saying it can help cure, and it can. So it might be that people are busy taking the drugs for the tuberculosis, but by golly, they got better quickly through the autogenics. And it's only can help, not does help. It's not emphatically black and white. You know, I think, you know, I can fight the other corner to say, actually, it's all right, even though we know that we don't make promises. But this isn't a promise. This is saying it can help cure. I also think it would be less ambiguous to take that wording out. But of course, I hesitate, because it's not, you know, I'm not the author. I'm not, you know, this is what was written at that time.
And if that's what he said as well.
Exactly. Well, that's another thing. It's what he said.
It's not what we're saying. That's what he said.
Mm.
Yeah, but if I sent it out to prospective clients, I'm endorsing that. So it's basically saying that I agree with this statement.
You can agree with the statement, because it is correct. It is all right. What we will always say to our clients is that we don't make any promises for them. And we will always say that. It's going to be down to you to engage with this and to apply it and practice. And then the surprises happen. And hey, we don't know where it will lead. And I always say that to my clients. I've sent this article out for years, ever since it was written. I've been sending that article out. It's one of the best that's ever been written, I believe. And no one has ever, except you, Bev, come up with that question mark. I'm very glad you have, because we should be looking at these things.
Yeah.
But actually, it's quite right. It's a quote of what Luther said. And the article is written not by you and not by me. And it isn't a claim for cure. It's help. And that's the key word in there.
Yeah, I think that I would disagree with that, though, Jane. It's help cure. It's helping to cure, alleviate the symptoms. It maybe comes from my desire to be as ethical as I can be, and to make sure that I'm not ever misleading any of my clients. And I guess I'm the kind of person that if I create any literature that's, you know, talking about the benefits of AT, I want to look at the proof of that, you know, the clinical studies. I want to be able to reference it and say, you know, it helps with all of these, and here's the proof for that, so that I'm not just plucking kind of like benefits out of the air because they sound good. You know, if a client ever said to me, well, how do you know it helps with that? I don't want to be the kind of practitioner that says, oh, actually, I don't know, I just picked it up in literature somewhere. Does that make sense?
Well, yes, it all makes sense. And yet it also illustrates the sort of grey areas that come all the way through autogenics, because Benefits can only be listed with might help with, or can do this or that or the other. We will never find conclusive proof that 100% of people suffering from irritable bowel syndrome has had it even helped. Actually, we'll leave cure out of it with AT, because it depends entirely on how the person engages with it.
Yeah.
and what happens. And that comes us back to that question that we had before, when Luta was asked, does autogenic training really work? And the answer is yes, it does, but it does its own work. It may not work in the way that we think we want it to. And that was Luther's own answer to the question, does it work? Which is a silly question, because the question was asked by a doctor, and the implication would then be, does it cure all these situations? And Luther himself at that point said no. Or rather, sorry, he said yes. However, in ways that we might not be expecting, not necessarily in what we might be wishing for. And every person has to learn it with their open mind and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is part of our problem, isn't it? We cannot say for sure these are the benefits. But what we can say for sure is that where symptoms are aggravated or caused by an unbalanced autonomic nervous system, those symptoms have a very, very high chance of reducing.
Yeah, I love the way you express that. Yeah, sort of stress-related symptoms.
Stress-related, absolutely. Yeah. And of course, any illness is also stress-related.
Yeah.
Because whatever we've got that's wrong with us, we are going to be afraid of what's going to happen in the future and what's going on next, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, that stress symptoms spiral.
Yes. It is. It's Anne's stress symptoms spiral. Yes,
definitely.
And it's that figure of eight things. When I'm stressed, my symptoms are worse, and when I've got bad symptoms, my stress is worse.
Yeah.
So something's got to prick that bubble.
Yeah.
And that's where autogenics can do that. So then that is all then about how the body responds. In fact, I'm going to mention my husband again. He had glandular fever, donkey's years ago now. And I'd learned autogenics and couldn't stop talking about it and all that stuff. And then he started coming home at weekends with a temperature of 103, going to bed on a Friday evening, a really high fever all the way through the weekend. And on Monday morning, just being better enough to go back to work. Friday, the next thing happened. Temperature of 103, sorry, that's old-fashioned terminology, probably 39 or 40. And then the same thing happened. And doctor said, you've had glandular fever, it's the dormant bug, you'll have this forever now, you know, it just sort of spike up every so often. I said, I think you ought to go and learn autogenic training. So he trotted into London, and after the second session, I think, he had a very, very high temperature again. And he was like, oh, see, it didn't work. And I said, well, you haven't hardly started yet. And that was the last time he had a spiked up glandular fever reaction. So autogenic training cured him. It did. But we can't say it cured him. We can only say he did autogenic training. And as a result, he no longer had those symptoms. And whether that came from stress, distress, or whatever it was, nobody could quite know. Nobody would fathom. Why does a virus, which is normally known for being dormant, suddenly find itself gone?
Yeah. The mystery.
It is.
The mystery of autism.
But it was a very good mystery in our household, I can tell you.
I bet.
He was very resistant to going to learn autogenic training. And I said, I'm not going to spend the rest of my life with you in bed every weekend, because you're ill. That doesn't make sense when there is something else that might help. Not only did it help, it did the job. So we can't deny that cure can happen, but neither should we promise it. You're quite right, which is why. So look, I don't know what you would like to do with that, Bev. You can take, if you want to use that article, you could take that out or add something to it in some way, which is no promises can ever be made. However, we are aware, of course, that no promises can ever be made. The systems work on themselves. Mm. And that's the best we can do. Or we can say helping or something. Put something in.
Yeah, yeah, sure. And thank you. It's been really helpful to kind of bring up like what I was feeling about it and just bring that into the group and kind of see what your opinions are. Mm. Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you.
In other words, it's yet more complications because everybody's right.
Yeah, and like you say, you know, I read that article before I was 80, and it wasn't a thing. And there's something about, wanting to be as ethical as I can be.
That's fair enough, and I appreciate that very much. I mean, you know, of course, of all the things we should be is open and honest, and so on. And as long as we don't personally make promises.
Yeah, sure.
I think that article does stand up. I'm happy with it. But then, you know, if you want to chop it out and write something different at the end as your own, that's up to you entirely.
Yeah, sure.
I'm thinking you could perhaps put like a disclaimer or something at the bottom.
Bottom, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And just the fact that an individual process is just that. It's an individual process, so no claims can ever be made. No definitive claims can ever be made. That would be a good word, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Right. We are still recording, I'm imagining.
Can I stop?
I think it's probably the right time to stop. Is that all right? And I'm glad we've kept that going.